Erev Shabbat Shalom, Parshat Balak, Parsha full of blessing and insight and overflowing with interpretive possibilities and lessons for life. I want to, first of all, I remind you of the story, which you're going to read tomorrow, please God, that after the victory of the Israelites over Sihon and over Og, the king of Moab, a major kingdom on the Dead Sea, on the other side, on the east bank of the Dead Sea, freaked out. He was very nervous that the Israelites were going to conquer him too. And he decided that he didn't have the military wherewithal to overcome or to defend himself against the Israelites. He decided he needed some kind of special secret weapon. So he turned to a famous prophet, Bilam, who actually, whose name actually appears in non-Jewish, non-Israelite archaeological testimonia, and says, I know that everybody you curse is cursed, and everybody you bless is blessed, so I want you to curse out the Israelites in this way. I'll be able to defend myself from them. Maybe I can destroy them. Bilam says he doesn't want to, and it's back and forth, and finally he's convinced, and he goes, and God tells him, go, but only do what I tell you to do. The implication is that Bilam is a non-Jewish prophet of God, which is a line of interpretation which you find among Chazal. The rabbis have sort of very different opinions about him. On the one hand, they see him as really the ultimate in corruption and evil, and then there are those who say, no, he was as great as Moses. As great as Moses was for the Jews, so was Bilam to the for the non-Jews. And then the question is, what does that mean? He's certainly a prominent figure. He's a force to be taken seriously, to be reckoned with. Anyways, he comes and he tries to curse the Israelites three times, and he ends up blessing them. What I would like to share with you is an insight which is of contemporary note, or contemporary implications, suggested by the longtime Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda of Berlin, who was not only a great Rosh Yeshiva and a great Talmudist, he was also a proto-Zionist in support of the movement of Chibat Zion, people who came to settle in Eretz Israel even before Herzl in the 1880s and the 1890s. He was in charge of an organization called Chovavet Zion, of which my ancestors were part. And in addition, he had, contrary to what many people say, if you read his writings, he had a very, very open place in his heart for a broader curriculum for people who study Torah, not just Talmud and Chumash and so on and so forth. But that's again for another time. His commentary on Chumash is called Hamik Davar, going deeply into the words, which is something which certainly marks everything he did. He was not a person who was of any way, shape, or form superficial. And he perceives behind the various psukim worlds of ideas and insights and historical dynamic that I don't think would occur to the average person. When Bilam tries to curse the Israelites three times, at the beginning, and then God turns into a blessing, and he can't help but bless the people. And so, at the beginning of the first blessing that he offers, he says as follows. He goes up to a mountain, he looks out and sees the camp of the Israelites. I see the Israelites, I see Israel from the top of the mountains, or from the top of the cliffs. And I acknowledge, and I will, I can praise, I can validate them from the hills. It is a people that dwells alone and is not rendered among the nations. Now this verse is usually interpreted, and that's the straightforward meaning of the verse, that there's something unique about Israel. There's something unique about the Jews. We don't fit automatically in among other people. And as a result, one of the blessings that we have is our otherness, is the fact that we are different. The Netziv takes that idea and goes one step further. He says, "Hein am levadad yishkon." He takes the word yishkon. Lishkon really means to dwell, and it means to dwell in security, and to dwell in happiness, and to dwell under good circumstances, successfully. So he says, Heinam levadad, when it's a people who dwell, who it's a people, when it's alone, its status is fine. It will be secure. It will be happy. It will have a meaningful and secure life. And then he said, which means that if the Jews keep to themselves, it doesn't mean isolate themselves, but if we are different, if we preserve our differentness, if we preserve our otherness, if we preserve our Torah, if we take our function in the world seriously, if we treasure our relationship with God and our relationship with each other, then we will be able to, then we will come into our own and we will dwell in safety and in peace. Then he has one step further and said, and alludes to this. He doesn't say it explicitly, but it's clear that that's his intention. He says, Yishkon also doesn't just mean dwell, but it comes from the word Shekhinah. Shekhinah is the divine presence, where God indwells among the people. So in other words, he also sees the verses saying, Heinam levadad, when the people is alone, when the people is separate, Yishkon, God will cause his presence to dwell upon among the people. So you have the best of all worlds. Your world, your spiritual world is taken care of, and your physical needs are taken care of, and your political needs are taken care of, on the condition that the Jews are true to themselves and to their otherness, and to their uniqueness, and do not make themselves dependent upon other cultures and other peoples, and so on. Uvagoyim, he says, lo yitchashav. However, if they decide that they don't want, that they want to abandon their uniqueness, if they decide that they want to be like everybody else, that they want to jettison their value systems, and they think that the most important thing to do is to adopt the ways of other nations and be among other nations and do their best to assimilate, he says explicitly, to assimilate. Vagoyim, vagoyim, lo yitchashav. However, if they try to do that, they will not even the non-Jews will doubt their sincerity. They will never be totally, totally accepted. They'll always be looked at with a jaundiced eye. They won't learn, whereas Russell Leitch said in a different context, they're not going to earn their love, but they're certainly going to lose the respect of the other nations if they violate, if they give up their own unique identity. Now, one of the striking things about this statement is the fact that he has, and I have no doubt in my mind, and this is based on other things that the Netziv, the Rabbi Berlin, has said on other occasions, especially in a long essay on anti-Semitism. This is exactly the historical dynamic that led to modern anti-Semitism. Modern anti-Semitism, among other things, developed out of long-standing anti-Judaism, specifically in the age of emancipation, when Jews left the ghettos, when they abandoned Judaism en masse, when there was a flood of Jews who went to the baptismal font, and all they wanted to be was Germans and Frenchmen and Englishmen and so on and so forth. Even those who didn't convert tried very, very hard as much as possible to just be part of the dominant culture. And it was the visceral revulsion or refusal on the part of the dominant cultures to accept the Jews which helped to lay the way for classical anti-Semitism. Because what is classical anti-Semitism said? Anti-Judaism, which was pursued by Christianity and by Islam, maintained that there's something wrong with the Jews, but if they convert, they can be accepted 100%. What anti-Semitism said is that there's no way for a Jew to stop being a Jew. It's racial. It's in blood. In other words, this was, but because the Jews no longer were Jewish, and there was no longer, and even if they converted Christianity, there's no way to accept them because they remain whatever negative characteristics the Jews had, whatever malevolent actions they would carry out among Christians. It doesn't matter. There's no way to resolve it. No, the best efforts of the Jews to become Germans and Italians and Frenchmen and Englishmen are hollow at best. And however, if the Jews maintain their own integrity, at the very least, they will maintain the respect of the others. I'm sure that this dynamic of anti-Semitism, which was in full play in the day, in the lifetime of the Nativ, is what he saw in this verse. And in light of the uptick in the wave of anti-Semitism, which has seemingly out of nowhere swept the United States and the West in general, one has to ask, and this is the question I'm going to leave you with because I really don't have an answer. Jews have integrated into the broader society, and they have accepted, to a large degree, the values of the broader West, especially in the United States, but not just in Europe as well. Is the present wave of anti-Semitism this kind of dynamic, or is it different? Because even those Jews who maintain themselves as Jews and identifiably as Jews also suffer from anti-Semitism. Einam levadad yishkon. The security part is problematic. I have no doubt that einam levadad, when we're loyal to the Torah and to God, that God causes his presence to dwell among us. That's a tangible reality for anybody who lives in the Jewish community. The other part, we have to ask ourselves. So that it's interesting, whereas the Nativ has tried to understand the anti-Semitism of his day, the verse raises the question of how do we understand the difficult times that we are going through now in our day. Something perhaps for the Shabbat table. I would just add that when we say Am Levadad Yishkon, the nation that dwells alone, that doesn't mean that we isolate ourselves from the world. It means that when we participate in the world, we do so as ourselves, with our values, whether they align totally with what other people maintain or not. We must be true to ourselves, and that may be difficult. The simple reason that we are not understood, and many Jewish values don't line up either with Christian values or Muslim values or progressive values and so on. But Judaism has its own integrity, and that's what Am Levadad requires. That's what Am Levadad demands. If we want God's presence to dwell upon us, to dwell among us, rather, it is important for us to be true to ourselves. And then, as such, to participate in the broader concerns of humanity. As Rav Soloveitchik interpreted the statement of Abraham to the Hittites at the beginning of the negotiations for the purchase of the cave of Machpelah, Ger v'toshav anochi. I am both a stranger and I'm a resident. We are part of humanity, but we have ideals and ideas and values and a mission which sets us and makes us also apart and alone. Einam levadad yishkon, uvagoyim lo yitchashav. Shabbat shalom.